Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future, which has been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're welcoming Writer of the Future winner, Carrie Callahan. She is going to talk about her winning story, Dirt Road Magic, and whatever else pops up. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks.
Just a little caption, little tiny bite about yourself. Who are you? Where you're from? How did you start writing? Just this, but little, not for the whole half hour.
My name is Carrie Callahan. I was named after a Stephen King novel. I grew up mostly in Florida,
really?
But I have, I use that to introduce myself so that people remember me. It's a very striking image. And,
wow.
Yeah, and so I started writing as a kid, but I started taking it really seriously when I was in my 20s, and I submitted twice to the Writers of the Future, and the second time I won. So
cool.
Here I am.
When you started writing as a kid, what were you writing? Were you writing poetry, short stories, what poems, plays?
I attempted songs and I attempted poems, but mostly I wrote short stories. I thought they were book length, but I was 10, so
yeah,
I didn't. The books were shorter back then.
Well, also, like, I remember the first story I ever wrote, I think I was about 8, and the teacher said to write a story that's a paragraph, and she wrote a sentence on the chalkboard. Well, my story was 8 pages. It turned out to be this whole myth that I made up. But you don't really have a sense of length. I thought I wrote a novel. That's only 8. Like,
yeah, I actually have a very similar story. In the 8th grade, my English teacher asked us to write a 10-page story, and he meant 10 pages on notebook paper and single-sided and just written out. And what I did was I actually wrote a 10-page story double-sided, so technically it was 20 pages in 10-point font, which single-spaced, which if you have any idea of what that is printed, it's a lot of words on
mm-hmm.
one page. And I turned it in, and he was like, "What is this?" It was way more than he was expecting. And it was way more than I expected to write, so.
Maybe a little more than double, actually.
Yeah, just a little.
But the thing is, it's really interesting, and that I like to talk to authors about. You know how when you write a story, it comes from you, and yet it doesn't come from you. There's like this thing that just kind of pours out, and you don't really know, especially the control of the characters. People think, "Oh, well, it's you," and they're like, "No, not really. If they don't want to do something, they won't do it." What was your experience when you were first starting to write stories? Were you fighting that, or were you embracing it?
Well, it's changed as I've gotten older. When I was a kid, the stories were about me. They were very thinly veiled superhero stories about me. And they kind of helped me cope with my childhood a little bit, I think. So there was no fighting the character because I was the character. Of course, she did everything I would do. She was me. But as I've gotten older, it's been weird because sometimes, you know, you do want to tell your character to do something because you want them to do it, or because the plot wants them to do it. But if you want to make them round and human, it means sometimes they're going to tell you no, and they're going to tell the plot no. They're not always going to do something that's convenient because humans are complicated, and so characters, which are supposed to be humans, generally speaking, of course, some people, you know, they write about robots or aliens or supernatural creatures that aren't human, and that's fine too, but when you're writing human characters, it's complicated because people are complicated.
But even if you're writing characters that are android or robot or monsters or whatever, there's got to be a sense of independent spirit within them, or us humans who are reading it won't really relate to it, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. And in fact, I think especially in those cases, because they aren't human, they should be even less likely to do exactly what you want.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. But it's funny because I was thinking one of the most human, non-human characters I ever read was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. He was very human, and you really felt sorry for him because he was really a product of his environment.
Oh, for sure, for sure. He was a monster because he was made a monster, not because, you know, he made himself a monster. He didn't make that choice. So.
Yeah, he didn't even have a choice, really.
Right, that's the tragedy of Frankenstein, or Frankenstein's monster, I'm sorry, but, you know, the book,
well,
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein, too, really. both Frankenstein's monster really neither of them were bad. They just, it was just what was going on around them that made them appear that way, but neither of them were really bad. The monster wasn't bad, and the scientist wasn't bad, you know, just what happened.
Right, because of what they were, they made the decisions that they did, and the wrong choices led them into a tragic situation. It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah, and I always wondered if that's what she was going for, like a Shakespearean kind. Because I know she was competing with her husband, but her fiancé and, who's the other? I forgot. It was a very famous author.
Lord Byron?
Byron, that's right. Yeah. And for some reason, I blanked out his name.
It's okay. I do that all the time.
Maybe because he was such a rogue. I don't know. But, she was like, everybody else had written their stories and she hadn't, and she was competing with these great authors, and she was an author, but she hadn't been published yet. And she actually wrote the best of the bunch, so you never know what's going to happen when you're a writer.
No, for sure, and by many accounts, she's really one of the first people to write science fiction, you know, because what she was writing was based on cutting-edge science at that time.
I know. It's really interesting. It's first H.G. Wells and then Mary Shelley. Those were the two people that really, they created it, basically.
Right. Yeah, and in fact, some of the science we have today is because of scientists who were inspired by Frankenstein and inspired by H.G. Wells' work, and who else? Jules Verne. That's the other one. Jules Verne, for sure. I don't think...
Poe?
Yeah.
Poe, because he wrote science fiction, too.
He did, yeah.
So
they called them scientific romances back then.
And it's really diverse. Poe was really diverse. He wrote mystery. He wrote science fiction. He wrote horror. He was very diverse writer in such a short lifespan. He wrote so many different kinds of really famous stories. It's fascinating how a mind works.
Yeah, and it seems that way for a lot of authors back then. And these days we would call them cross genre, but back then it was just part of being a writer. And then it wasn't until they were doing the pulp magazines, right, that people had to start using pen names.
Yeah.
In order to get their work to different markets.
like Agatha Christie, she had to go by Mary West. I always forget the name, Westermont or West something. But anyway, it was a family name. And in order to write something other than murder mystery, she had to use that. I think they said it fooled people for like 20 years until a critic figured it out that it was Agatha Christie from the style.
I think the same thing happened to Stephen King.
Yeah.
Almost exactly.
Yeah, and also Joe Rowling, it happened really fast. J.K. Rowling's, she wrote Casual Vacancy under a different name, a man's name. And she was hoping that she could, like, see how one of her stories did without, you know, the Harry Potter and all that. And somebody picked it up right away from her style and was a whistleblower. It's harder now to do it. Would have been back in Agatha Christie's day.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. And I think today, though, things get weird because of how authors are expected to be branded, which, you know, in my mind is something you do to cattle. but it's valuable to kind of develop a voice and a theme, but it's kind of weird that we pigeonhole authors and say, you're a mystery author now. You know, you're not allowed to write anything else. No fantasy for you.
My problem.
You know, I don't think...
I don't write just one thing. I write all kinds of different things. That's my problem. Can't do it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's the creative brain. You know, it can get really bored with the same thing over and over again, so it's going to want to find other genres and other hobbies and crafts and anything else it can kind of latch on to. So.
I know. It's great if you are one of those people who do that. That's fine, but don't try to force me into doing it because I'm not like that. You know, it's just I don't think it's fair to the different authors who do all different kinds of writing like you and I do, but to push you into the science fiction story is popular, so now all we want you to do is science fiction. Well, I have other books in my head. I have fantasy, I have mystery, I have romance, I have all different kinds of things. Why am I only doing this? You know, my whole spirit rebels at that.
Yeah, it's really, it makes me a little claustrophobic, the idea that I would have to pick a genre and then that's my genre. That would drive me crazy.
Yeah, I can't do it. If I'm never a popular writer, I'll never be a popular writer because I have all different kinds of... I have science fiction, I have mystery, I have children's stories, I have all different kinds of books. And the books I'm working on right now still fit that. I have all different kinds. I can't just do one thing. And my little head won't do it.
Yeah, I also have projects all over the place, but, you know, I just think it's a matter of writing the best things you can and putting them out there. And if people find your work, they find your work, and that's great. And if they don't find your work, well, I mean, there are things you can do, but there's only so much you can do, you know.
Right.
It's subjective. So it's not, you can't force people to like it. You can't write exactly the thing people are going to want. It's just not, it's very capricious. So,
it is.
Pointless worrying about it.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about it. I'm just saying that I don't like pigeonholes. I don't like putting the pigeonholes on anything. Not just what I write, but what my thoughts are, what I like. Do you think that when you were brought up by whatever forces, do you think that is what led you to like different genres?
Like how I was raised?
Yeah, you know, your family, your schooling. For me, it was my parents. my mom and dad were both readers, but readers of different things, so I ended up reading all different kinds of stuff. And we also had something that they don't have today. We had what was called the mobile library, and what it did, they used to come around in a little minivan, and it had library books in it, and you'd go and check out books, and you'd also go to the library, too. It was fun. It's like going, and people don't go to the library anymore because you can get it as an e-book or whatever, and I like books. I like an actual book, and that's one of the, that's how I was raised, so that's what I'm asking you. Do you think you feel that the books that you were brought up with led you to the path of writing that you're on?
I would say so, just in that I read a lot. So I was a really shy, quiet kid, and I spent a lot of time reading, and that was because it was a way to completely escape. Like, it wasn't like movies or TV shows where there was always this glass barrier of the screen between me and what was happening. I was the person in the book, and that was really enjoyable for me to be somebody else. And I think investing in that medium a lot as I was growing up made it so that I really valued it. And so when it came time where I was learning how to write and I was writing my own stories, I started to realize I could do this. I can do this for other people. And I think that that's what drew me into writing. My mom and my dad are both readers, but like you, they read very different things. And sometimes their interests overlap. And when I would go to my dad's house over the summer, he had this massive paperback collection of fantasy and sci-fi novels. And so I would be reading Isaac Asimov and Robert Heinlein over the weekends when I was, or over the summers, I'm sorry, when I was a teenager. And that was really, eye-opening. And it really opened my eyes to different genres in a way that was really, I don't know, just like it made those summers for me, I guess. It was just really enjoyable. Yeah. And so coming back around to writing, you know, of course I'd want to do that. Of course I want to do that for other people. And so, yeah, I think just valuing writing in general and what I got out of reading made me value writing more.
And I think that's really important what you were saying, too, is that when you're a kid, well, I think that books transport you. I do. Whatever world you're reading, you may be whatever. You may be a shy kid, or you may be a sickly child, or you may be a new kid, which is what I was, or you may be whatever. But when you're reading a book, it is an escape to whatever you're reading. So I loved murder mysteries, so I went to London, and I went back in time, and it was an escape. And I think that's one of the things that some people that don't like to read don't get. They think of it as a chore and not a joy. And that's one of the things I try to promote, is that reading's fun.
Well, I think it's one of those things where it kind of has to be experienced to be really understood. And for people who haven't quite got there, as far as reading is concerned, where they can just kind of fall into it and then be dreaming, you know, which is what it feels like for me. It almost feels like a dream that I'm kind of going through. I think that for those who don't have that, maybe it is a chore. And if you keep telling them reading is fun, I don't know. I worry that they're going to be more rebellious because of it. They'll be like, no, I know what it really is. But I think that anybody can get there. Like, I know people who didn't read, you know, but got into it.
I think that one of the things is to introduce people to a book of a subject that they already like. Like, if it's their birthday or a holiday or something, and you give them a book, don't give them a book about something they have no interest in. But if they're like baseball fanatics, give them a book that has somebody who's a baseball player that is really, you know, is interesting. they'll get into it, believe me, because I've done it.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
You know, introduce them to something they're passionate about. And then it's not a chore.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I love about genre fiction. I think a lot of people, they think of fiction, they think of reading like Moby Dick or, you know, they think of reading Shakespeare. And while I love reading Shakespeare now, when I was a kid, it wasn't exactly my cup of tea. But reading something where there's spaceships or magic, I mean, I think that's why Harry Potter was such a big deal. It got so many kids into it because it was an interesting story for kids, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. I think it's really important. I think that is one of the major things to get people to read is to bring the joy of it to them. Whatever way they can, you know, whether it's magic or a passion or something. I mean, it's really important. We're getting to the point where I want to talk about the contest. You said you entered it twice. What made you enter it the first time, and what made you do it again?
Well, the first time I had read about the Writers of the Future contest, the fact that it was free to enter, that it was blind judged, that's really big to me. Then, and also the fact that it was open to amateurs, which I was, and I felt that, I guess, I kind of wanted to see if I could do it. And so I submitted the first time just kind of to see what would happen. And I actually got an honorable mention the first time. So it wasn't too bad for my first attempt. And then that was actually really encouraging. And so I did decide to submit again, I think almost a year later. I decided to just write a story, but I made the decision very last minute in the last, I want to say, like a week before the deadline. And I went through 4 drafts in 4 days and then submitted it with the help of my friends. And then I just wanted to do my best and see how far that would get me. And I feel like I put a lot more into that second attempt than I had in my first attempt. Because the first one was, you know, a curious, how far can I get? And then the second one was, okay, I'm going to go as far as I can possibly go. It's just a very different mindset. And then I won. So that was very exciting.
And I don't know where you are right now, but how did you like your trip to LA? How did you like the speakers and all the stuff you won?
Oh, I thought the whole trip was amazing. It was great to be able to talk to authors who are pros in the field, who are just, you know, out there, you know, living the life where I'm kind of still starry-eyed and new. They really know the ins and the outs, I guess, and they kind of help teach us the ins and the outs, and meeting the other writers was just, I mean, words can't quite get into it, you know, it's just like a instant family, you know, like instant noodles, just add hot water, like it was like Writers of the Future, just add a plane trip to LA and it's, you know, in a workshop, it was just perfect chemistry. So that was all really amazing, and just, you know, there's nothing like the awards event for writers. I mean, there are other, you know, writing awards, of course, you know, you have the esteemed Hugos and Nebulas and all of that jazz, but it's not quite the same, like, glitzed up event that it was for us. So it was really exciting and really, I don't know, just a really beautiful night and something I don't expect to experience a whole lot in my life as a solitary, lonely little writer.
I think that's one of the fun things is getting the presentation and meeting other writers and your illustrator. And how did you enjoy that, meeting your illustrator, and how did you guys get on and everything?
Oh, yeah, I thought we got along great. I think she did a great job capturing the feeling and the spirit of my story. Yeah, and I knew which illustration was mine immediately, because as soon as they opened the doors, I saw it and I was like, oh, that's mine. So she really, you know, she really caught it. And I just walked straight there. I didn't even look at the other pictures. because as soon as I looked at that one, I knew it was mine. And so I just went straight towards it, and everybody was like, whoa, look at her go. Because I was just so certain. And so I knew that she got my story, you know, and so that was really, I guess, a comfort, you know, and also just a really, just a great joy to be able to see something come to life like that.
I think that one of the coolest things is you give your story or your book to someone to illustrate or do a cover, and sometimes you don't have to say anything, but sometimes they say, well, what do you want? And you give them your idea, and they do it so amazingly that to get a story blind, though, and to do a perfect illustration for you, that is really cool. It's like she really got into your mindset for the story. Did you guys talk?
We talked a little. It got really loud because all of the other writers were, of course, really excited to talk to their illustrators too, and there were pictures and things getting signed. So we talked a bit, but it wasn't exactly a conversation moment. It was more of just a yay kind of feeling where everybody was really jubilant. So it wasn't exactly, I think we were like kind of screaming at each other behind the illustration, trying to talk, but so it wasn't. But no, she's really great. She's really intelligent, like almost intimidatingly so.
Oh, so, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's an Oxford graduate, I want to say. And she chose illustration. It wasn't something she had to do. And that's something, there's something really impressive about that, I think.
That is impressive. That's really cool, too. You guys were given the books. What did you feel like when you got your book with your story in it?
It was surreal. I think I kept forgetting that it was real. And even when I was there, I sometimes forgot what I was doing there. Like, I would think, oh, this is such a great little workshop convention thing. And then I would forget, wait, I'm in the book. My name's on the page, my words are there. And on the plane ride home, I actually read my story because I didn't remember anymore anything about the story. I had just, they'd crammed so much stuff in my head, I forgot what I had written. And it's a great problem to have, really. And so I reread it and I just, you know, it was just weird in a good way.
That's really interesting that you forgot. I actually, sometimes I think that's good for a writer. It had like momentary memory block or something. because when I've actually picked up a book or a short story or a fan fiction story that I wrote many, many years ago, and I forgot that I wrote it. If somebody would say, I would get something, an email saying, oh, this is a great story, and I would go, oh, yeah, I forgot I did that.
Yeah, I think it's especially useful for editing, you know, like you put it away, and when you come back to it, you forget what you wrote, so you don't fill in the blanks for yourself anymore, and you can actually fix things. I think it's really easy to give yourself a pass, so it's good to forget sometimes what you wrote down.
Oh, I fully believe that. I do. How did you feel when you won? When you got the award?
I was so nervous. I was pretty nervous, but I was also really, again, it felt surreal until I had the thing in my hand. And I kept wanting to make a joke about it being a murder implement, but then at the last minute I got too nervous and stuck to my speech. But then I think six other people afterwards made that joke to me. And so I knew it would have killed. So I'm still kicking myself over not making that joke. But but it's a really beautiful award. It's sitting above my writing desk right now, so I can keep looking at it and reminding myself that that happened. It was real.
I think that's really cool. Congratulations. Do you have any plans for a new book or are you writing for something or anything coming up that you'd like anybody to know about?
Yeah, actually, I'm writing a manuscript right now. It's called Blood Tramp Blues. It's about a couple hitchhikers who run into some Lovecraftian horror out on the road. And it's based on my own hitchhiking experiences, sort of. Obviously, I didn't have any real horrific experience, but that's what it's focused on. So it should be interesting. I'm still kind of exploring, but I've gotten a substantial amount of it done.
That's great. And do you know when you think it might come out, next year or this year?
Well, that's anybody's guess, because once the manuscript is done, I plan on shopping it out, seeing if I can't get representation and maybe publication. I know a lot of my friends self-publish, but I wanted to try the traditional route first. So my plan is to kind of submit it out there and see what other people think. It's really not my job to reject me, so I don't self-reject. I let the editors do that.
Okay, that sounds good. I mean, that's really good. Okay, and do you have anything that's coming up, any conventions or sci-fi events or book signings for the book award that you just got or anything coming up that you want people to know about?
Yeah, I will actually be at some conventions in the fall. Most notably, I'll be at Dragon Con, and I will be at the Imaginarium Convention in Louisville, Kentucky. All of the events are on the events page of my website, which is www.carriecallahan.com. And then there's a little option to click on events. It'll show you everywhere I'll be this fall, so I'll be around.
Okay. And do you have any social media that people could get contact with you and say hi, like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah. I've got Twitter and Instagram. I am at Ree Callahan. That's R-E-E-C-A-L-L-A-H-A-N. And I also have other social media also. I have a Facebook page and a YouTube channel that I don't update very much, but you can find all of those links on my website at carriecallahan.com.
Great. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry. ¶¶